there's eight grounds for eviction, but the three that we primarily see are for non-payment, criminal activity, unauthorized tenants, and then the one that seems to be more common now is disturbing the peaceful enjoyment of the premises for other tenants. So, like, basically they're disturbing the whole complex through whatever actions or behaviors they're creating through that. So kind of the first step in the eviction process is they need to be served with a 3-day notice. There's times that we'll see like a 10-day notice, a 30-day notice. I've seen a 60-day notice, but the typical standard notice is a 3-day notice, which needs to be served to them. That can be posted on their door any time of the day. Typically, we don't serve a lot of those. The management companies will hire a private process server to do a lot of that. So we don't see when these actions are actually starting. Following that, you know, the person has those 3 days to either pay their rent, which it typically is, or get in compliance, whether they have a person that's living with them that's on the lease, get them on the lease, stuff like that. If those actions aren't taken, then they have to go file an affidavit of service with the court. The court will then set a court date, and then that tenant needs to be served with the summons and complaint, telling them when the court date is, where it's at, which is at the Cass County Courthouse, to give their side of why they probably shouldn't be evicted. So once that hearing is held, the judge will determine whether they're going to issue a judgment for eviction against the tenant. And if they do, they'll give them either immediate possession of the unit or give them 5 days to move out. Somewhere in there. So if a person doesn't show up, it's usually issued immediate. If the person shows up, has some valid reasons for why they haven't moved out yet, maybe they need more time, they don't have a place to live yet, they'll give them 5 days to get out. And that's per the judgment. So we don't act on that judgment. We act on what's called a special execution, which is an order from the court directing the sheriff's office to return the property to the landlord or property manager. And that's kind of where the sheriff's office gets involved. I guess to rewind a little bit on the summons and complaint, a lot of those are also served by a private process server. We don't see a lot of those either. Usually the first time we know that we're going to be doing an eviction is when the special ex or the order from the court comes into our office. And that's when we kind of know that we got to get the ball rolling on that. So when we get those orders in, We have a process that we go through to do that. We put together operation plans in every one of them because we're trying to do them as safe as possible, yeah. Not just for us, but for the tenants, for the landlords and property management. We have a lot of resources that we can use. So, like, recently we got a it's kind of cool. It's a little remote control car. It's got big wheels, low center of gravity. It's got a camera built into it. So if we get into a situation where we think we might have maybe a hostile tenant or somebody who's not going to cooperate with us versus us going into that unit, we can send that remote control car in. It's kind of eyes forward for us so we can see what we're getting into. We can see if we got closed doors and stuff in there. But we reach out to management, find out, hey, what's going on with these people? Who's living there? Do you know if there's anyone else living there? We'll do some research on the address itself to see what kind of calls for service have been generated there. You know, is it a quiet unit and the person just hasn't paid? Then it's kind of a straightforward. We're just going to go and be like, hey, you know, we have this order from the court. You have to leave the premises. We'll allow them to pack up some stuff. You know, we want them to get, you know, essential items, you know, phone, charger, wallet, purse, medications, clothes, anything they might need for their kids and stuff like that. But when we do that eviction, that is not moving day for them. That's basically we're turning that property back over to management. Management will generally change the locks on it. We'll post the eviction on the door or the special execution, the order from the court. We'll post that to the door so that way if anybody's coming back there that maybe expects to get in, knows what happened and why they can't get in. And then we also put a trespass notice up there in case we go do the eviction and nobody's there. letting them know that they no longer live there. If they have to get in there to get property, they got to make arrangements with management. And management is actually responsible for maintaining the tenant's property for 28 days. So okay. A lot of times property managers are pretty good about saying, hey, come down to the office, let's talk. We can open up the unit from like 8 to 4 on Friday, get a mm-hmm. U-Haul, mm-hmm. get some buddies, move your stuff out.
So they're not going to lose everything.
Well, not if they make a concerted effort to get their property back.
Right.
So there are some people who will just abandon it. Some people don't have a whole lot in there. Some of them are in the process of moving out already. I have one that's kind of weird right now where management went and took that property and put it into storage. And through the court process, it got deemed as abandoned. So I actually have a writ of special execution directing me to sell the abandoned property at public auction to satisfy moving and storage costs. And so when we got that order in, it was a little odd, and I reached out to the civil process board throughout the state. Nobody mm-hmm. had really heard of something like that happening, but sounds like we've maybe come to a resolution on that here where we can get the judgment amount to the plaintiff and actually restore the property that's been deemed abandoned back to that tenant, which I think is kind of a win-win in that situation. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of a real contentious issue between the tenant and the landlord.
So. Sergeant Goetz, I have a question for you with evictions. Can people, because I've heard different things about this, can people get evicted in North Dakota where it's so cold during the winter?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So there's really nothing that states that an eviction can't take place like during a certain season or during mm-hmm. a certain time or anything like that. One of the things we look at when we do these evictions, and we kind of have this unwritten rule, like we're not trying to evict people the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We're not trying to evict people like the week of Christmas and stuff like that. There's a human part to that. And so there's times like we may go out if we think it's just a real low risk, non-payment type thing, go and talk to that tenant and be like, hey, we have this order from the court directing us to evict you. Like, I'm going to give you through the weekend to get out. And then after that, we can come at any time. So I'm strongly urging you to do this on your own to get as much of your stuff out of here as you can.
I can't imagine this would be easy.
No, they're not. Like we take weather into consideration. You know, if like let's just say it's December or January, and mm-hmm. we see that we got a winter storm warning or a blizzard warning coming into effect, we're probably gonna, if we've got something scheduled for that day, we're probably gonna push it off. And for the most part, property managers are pretty understanding about that. Because, like, we may not be able to get there if it's a really bad storm. We may need to help patrol with some stuff. It's just really not feasible if it's 30 below wind chill out that we're taking somebody out. Especially if we find out, you know, like, they don't have a vehicle. They don't really have anything. Mm-hmm. That might be one of those times where we might go talk to them ahead of time just to kind of give them a warning. Like, hey, it's super cold out. We're going to give you a few days, but after those few days, we can be coming at any time. We never tell them when we're coming because we don't want to set ourselves up for like a or an ambush like that.
Well, and to that point, Sergeant Goetz, I mean, you know, you mentioned the little car that you have now, and we've discussed these things in the manner regarding SWAT with the sheriff before. I mean, there's a lot of, I would imagine, in your situation, too, pre-planning, because I would think they are rare, but we have had some situations in both Cass, and I think there was one in Grand Forks County where deputies were attempting to issue eviction notices and ended up getting in firefights and things like that.
Yeah, you know. Go ahead, Sheriff.
Go ahead, Sean. I'll add some stuff after you do.
Yeah, so prior to everything in Grand Forks, we were already putting together some plans and stuff like that. We're pre-planning stuff. But that one was definitely an eye-opener for us. And I remember the next day the sheriff came down to us and said, what do you guys need? Like, you know, the sheriff was really concerned because he understands there's a lot of risk involved in this. So, you know, we have a lot of tools at our disposal, you know, like door rams, Halligans to breach doors. We have a drone that we can fly in there, but that's kind of limited because it's a tight space. It's pretty loud. It doesn't get through doors and stuff like that. So that's better for like really large areas. Like sometimes we had to do evictions at shops and stuff like that. We have a drill. If we have to drill a lock, we'll allow management to get a locksmith if they need to. But, you know, through our pre-planning, we try to assess if there's any threats that we need to be mindful of and if we need to like enhance our response to that. Honestly, the first time I seen the video out of Grand Forks was just this last December. And I can honestly say that we've been in that situation several times. We were just very fortunate that a person didn't open fire on us, but the person started using some rhetoric that was alarming, but it's stuff we've heard before. And then when you hear the gunshots kind of ring out in it, that's kind of when it gets real. So yeah, we definitely take that into mind. And I think the Grand Forks situation is definitely was a big eye opener to the risk that's involved in these operations.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just add a couple things here. So, what I kind of wanted to recap, with what Sergeant Getz said, and he's doing a great job presenting this information, is just that, or really specify, is the fact that when we do these evictions, as you've kind of gathered from his conversation, these aren't just all of a sudden someone decides they're going to evict someone, right, and then we go over and kick someone out of their house or their apartment. These things go on for a long time. Typically, the tenant or the person being evicted has had several weeks, sometimes months, notice that they're not in compliance with something. They either, like Sean said, they either haven't paid their rent, they're causing issues at, let's say, like it's an apartment that we're dealing with. They're causing issues at that apartment complex, and management has told them that they need to change their ways, they need to pay the rent, or they need to get in compliance with what the property rules are.
Mm-hmm.
And so these things go on for several months where the property owner, the landlord, tries to negotiate with the tenant to get them into compliance, and eventually they're down to their last resort, and that is, right, they've tried to work with this person isn't listening to them, they're causing issues for the property or the landlord, owner, and so now they've gotten to the point of where they need to start this eviction process. And even once that starts, there's a lot of time there for that person to come into compliance. So once we are involved, there's been a lot of time here, and that person's had a lot of opportunities to make things right so they don't get evicted. But at that point, that just hasn't happened, right? So now we have to go and take that next step in action, and that is to actually remove the person from the property. And just like Sean said, these things have become very dangerous because a lot of times we don't even know who's all living at these places.
Right.
I mean, the landlord might give us the name of the tenant, right, the person that needs to be evicted. But they might have, and Sean will tell you this, they've gone through evictions, and there's seven or eight other people living in this place, which might be the reason why they're getting evicted, right? Because all these people are crashing there. There's a lot of come-and-go traffic. And now, because we don't know who's living there, they become very dangerous because oftentimes, not all the time, but sometimes there's people living there with extensive criminal histories that we're unaware of because we don't even know who they are. So that's why all these extra precautions are being taken, because we've had our deputies hurt in these situations. I mean, these aren't typically actions that are pretty civil. I mean, we're asking people or telling people that they need to leave the property and they don't want to, right? So it's not something where everyone's complying with everything. There's a lot of resistance to what we're doing. And as he mentioned, we have to take a lot of extra precautions to make sure that everyone's safe. And it's not only just our people that we're trying to keep safe. It's other people that live in that apartment building. It's also the tenants that we're trying to evict, right, because we don't want things to escalate so that they get hurt as well. And much like Ronnie mentioned, you know, there was the incident in Grand Forks where Officer Holte, who he was referencing, was shot and killed He was an officer with the Grand Forks Police Department, and he went there to assist the sheriff's office with an eviction, and that person didn't want to leave. And they went in the back room and they barricaded, and they opened fire on deputies and law enforcement as they went in there and tried to evict this person out of the property. So those things are always in their back of our mind, and every time that an incident like that occurs, we always do an evaluation of what happened. And, you know, not saying that they did anything wrong there. I certainly don't want to make that the point. But the point is that when someone gets hurt doing these, no matter who it is, whether it's a resident that lives in the property somewhere else, someone that's the tenant, our office officers, we evaluate those things to try to make these as safe as we can. And so that's why he was mentioning all the additional planning that goes into this. I mean, these guys have planned some evictions that we feel are going to be extremely dangerous when we go execute them. There's been times where we've sat on a property for 2 weeks and the person doesn't know that we're watching it, just to try to figure out when people are coming and going from there, who's coming and going, so we can identify people so that when we actually go do the eviction, it's done safely. And sometimes we might take extra resources. Sometimes we might use some individuals that are also on the SWAT team because of their extra additional tactical expertise to try to safely conduct these. So these things are and can become very dangerous. And again, the point I wanted to make was that the individuals that are being asked to leave these properties are given several weeks, if not months, time to try to rectify the situation before we end up being involved. So I really want to make sure that we have that point, because I think there's been maybe a misperception from some that we just go in and immediately evict people, and that's just not the case. People do have a lot of opportunities to try to make these situations right.
Yeah, and Sergeant Getz, you know, at some point, if you want to remind us too, people can go, I think you said it's ND Courts, and find out, you know, the property owner rights, the tenant rights. There's a lot of good information that you can find out as well if you're wondering or have any questions about anything at all.
Yeah, and on those resources, on those pages too, you know, it has all the forms that people would need. It has kind of like some legal aid resources, you know, what are your rights as a landlord, what are your rights as the tenant,
yeah,
stuff like that, so people know what they're getting into. And like the sheriff said, you know, these can evolve pretty quickly, but one of our old retired deputies used to have this saying, you know, luck favors the prepared. And so that's why we prepare for that, because then luck will be on our side, because we're trying to, you know, mitigate any perceived circumstances that we might come across. And to be honest with you, we deal with, unfortunately, some, you know, elderly people in these situations, some people going through some serious mental health stuff. So we'll reach out to, you know, Adult Protective Services, see if there's a case going on with them. See if there's other resources available. Mental health folks will try to reach out to Southeast, see if they got caseworkers and stuff like that, because we also want to be sensitive to those populations as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it looks bad for, you know, the landlord. It'll look bad for the sheriff's office if we go kick some 80-year-old lady out of her apartment because her son was staying there with her for 2 weeks. You know,
We do, you know, our staff does a phenomenal job. So Sergeant Getz and the deputies that are in this unit, I commend what they do every day. They do excellent off. You know, Sean will talk to me if he's got a situation that he thinks is a bad predicament, or maybe someone like he just mentioned that needs services. And we, you know, there's two sides of the coin, right? There's the landlord side, yeah, where, you know, that person's trying to pay for the property and the upkeep and things like that. And then there's the tenant side. And if the tenant is not in a good state of mind, if they do need resources, you know, we want to try to make sure that we can get them those services well to help them, because we don't want, if they are getting evicted out of this property, we don't want them to move somewhere else and then we have to evict them again, right?
Yeah.
We want them to get on the right track and be able to, you know, provide for themselves and have that shelter or that place to live in the future. So if we do realize through this process or through an eviction process that this person needs additional help, much like he said, there our staff's going to take the extra time to try to hook them up with the proper services so that this doesn't happen to that person again, and that they can, you know, survive. And whether it's reaching out to family members or whoever to help assist them. So these processes are very can be very complex and complicated, and there's a big, huge safety piece to them as well. And so, again, like I already mentioned, I appreciate the work that they do over there every day in working through these difficult scenarios.
Yeah, like I said, it can't be easy to do. I have a question for you guys, which it's kind of off topic from evictions, but we hear it a lot in on TV, media. We hear about it a lot. Do we have rules with squatting? Because you'll hear how squatters will have these rights and they can take a house for months on end and it's hard to get them out of there.
Right. So we run into that somewhat frequently. You know, the person who was originally renting it has moved out, allowed people to stay there. Basically, people try to say that they have squatter's rights. There's nothing in North Dakota Century Code that defines squatter rights.
Okay.
On that same token, though, there's also nothing in North Dakota Century Code that defines residency. So basically, what landlords have to look at in those situations is they just have to go forward with an eviction. And so a lot of these evictions that we see, I'd say 99% of them, will have whoever the renter's name was on it and all others in possession or any other persons in possession, meaning anybody who's staying there that shouldn't be, so squatters, for example. And that kind of covers them so we can just empty out that unit and get it back to management. You know, the residency thing is kind of this big gray area. Like, when does somebody really establish residency?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to get mail there? Have they been allowed to stay there and they've been staying there for a week? Have they been staying there for 3 days? Did they just spend a night? You know, there's a lot of different scenarios and circumstances that you have to weigh on whether somebody has residency or not. And it's such a huge gray area for law enforcement to work with, where prior to the eviction, like, somebody's boyfriend or girlfriend won't move out. They're not on the lease.
And
so they'll call and try to have them trespass from the residence. Well, mm-hmm. They've established residency because they've allowed them to live there. So that's a gray area that we have to deal with. But the landlords should just proceed with the eviction action at that point.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. I can't about imagine that would be a nightmare to deal with.
Yeah.
And you're talking about relationships breaking up.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how much time we got, but I know in the beginning we talked about like numbers, like how many evictions are we doing a year and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll get in, let's just use a rough number of 300 evictions for us to do. I would say about 20% of them, those folks move out prior to us having to do the eviction. So they kind of get out after that 5 days and mm-hmm. they've turned their keys in and we don't need to proceed with it. But, you know, back in 2019, the sheriff's office took in 288 eviction actions. In 2020, that dropped down to 214, probably because of COVID.
Sure.
And we only served 156 during that time. 2021, the numbers were pretty low again. But then in 2022, once kind of like rent help stopped, people,
mm-hmm.
it was like time for them to start paying again, and they didn't. We've definitely seen an uptick in the numbers. We received 389 of them in 2022, 312 of them we had to complete. 2023, we received 368, 320 of them we had to complete. And then since then, the numbers have kind of went down a little bit. Into 24 and 25, we did about 200, 220 evictions where we actually had to go out and do it. And so, there was a little bit of a downtick in it with COVID stuff. But then once kind of all that rent help and kind of economy stabilized,
mm-hmm.
We saw a big uptick there for a couple of years.
Okay. Well, as we run towards the end of the segment here, we'll allow both of you to kind of give us some final information. I guess we'll start with you, Sergeant Getz. Any final bits of information that we might need to know on the civil process regarding evictions specifically?
Nothing really that we didn't already cover today. Okay. The evictions for us, you know, we want to make sure that we're doing these things safe for everybody involved. They're not fun to do, but I think we're fortunate that we do a good job of planning them, and we have tools if we need. And to put in context, very few of these kind of get to be contentious, but we do have those at times. And we work through them because we've done good planning, and we kind of know what to expect and what to deal with. But our end goal is just to do this safely and follow the court order and return the premises back to the landlord.
All right. And Sergeant Getz, give me that website in case anyone's listening out there as well, where those resources are located again real quick.
Yeah. So the best way to get there is just do a Google search, ND Courts Eviction, and the top two things that are going to pop up for you are on the North Dakota Courts website, Eviction for Landlords, Evictions for Tenants.
All right.
And you click on that, and it has all the information. And that's the information I give to landlords and tenants all the time. I'm like, just Google this. It'll give you what you need.
Fantastic. Great resources. Fantastic information, Sergeant Getz. Sheriff John, are your final thoughts this morning?
Yeah, well, as always, we appreciate our little segment of time here with both of you, and being able to get this information out to our community, because the best thing for us is to be transparent with it, with any actions that we're doing, and really to help educate people on the criminal justice process, because the criminal justice process can be very complex, and if you're not working within it every day, a lot of times people don't know or don't have access to this information. So obviously this gives us an opportunity to talk about this. I know that there's been a lot of discussions on eviction. So I think it was important for us to get this information out, but then also to go down this track of civil process that we're going to talk about for the next couple of weeks, because you're going to see that there are a lot of things that law enforcement deals with on through these civil actions that people just aren't aware of on a day-to-day basis. And really, it's just to make sure that we're carrying out the criminal justice process, that people, they have rights. In this instance, there's, like you mentioned, Ronnie, rights that the tenant has. So we want to make sure that we respect those in a law enforcement fashion. And then there's rights that the landlord or property owner has, and we want to make sure that we can respect those as well. And if we don't have these processes in place, right, then landlords, tenants wouldn't be able to proceed with living out their lives and being able to be protected in their personal effects and where they reside. So we're happy to get this information out. Again, we appreciate the segment of time. I appreciate Sergeant Getz and my deputies that work within the civil process unit, because a lot of these things can be very complex. Like he mentioned, sometimes they're not fun. No one wants to displace anyone from a residence by any means. But we also understand that people have to follow rules if they're renting property from other people, right? So, but certainly respect the job that they do over there, and making sure that they stay safe every day, that they keep our community safe when they're doing these things, the property owner, the tenants, and other people that reside in these areas. So I'm fortunate I've got a good group of people that are doing that every day. But no, just appreciate the opportunity again, and we'll continue these talks next week with another piece of the civil action process, as long as you guys are good with that.
Sounds wonderful.
Sounds fantastic. Sergeant Getz, Sheriff Johnner, as always, appreciate you. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll pick up the discussion with more of the civil process next week.
All right. You guys have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, gentlemen. Have a good rest of your day.
You guys.